But yeah.
So 50 minutes done. Dedication. We are continuing with what we did or we've been doing in the past few days. To interact with strategic plans of a number of institutions that relate with us in terms of our oversight responsibilities. Today we'll be taking presentations from DBSA and Land Bank. The chair of the DBSA is around here. Comrade Jabu. Oh, I haven't seen him. Ndate Mlekete, welcome. We have been looking forward to see you here. Deputy Minister, I think I would take this opportunity to hand over to you to lead us in terms of who's going to do what and who's here. I always do recognize some of the few people in your delegation from time to time. Over to you, Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm honored to be back in an undiluted position this time. There's no identity crisis. But I'm sitting with the chairperson here, who from time to time, if he comes to my office, I do have a problem whether to refer to him as chair of the DBSA or deputy minister. But chair, as you've correctly pointed out, mine again is going to be an easy one, introducing the Development Bank of Southern Africa that is here today to present its corporate plan in terms of its founding legislation and in compliance with this financial management legislation that governs these institutions. So as we are all aware that the development needs of the country and the wider region are extensive, and in many ways structural in nature. Although considerable progress has been made over the past decade and a half or so, the levels of poverty remain very high, with high backlogs in access to basic and social services, and high unemployment and structural weaknesses in key areas of our economy. The past year has seen a concerted reaffirmation of government's commitment to realizing its vision of a better life for all South Africans. As part of this commitment, government recently adopted the infrastructure plan, which we have tabled before the country, and it is intended to transform the economic landscape of South Africa. It is intended to create a significant number of new jobs, strengthen the delivery of basic services to the people of South Africa, and support the integration of the African economies. Therefore, there is a structure that has been established, the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission, with 17 strategic projects which have been developed and approved to support economic development and address service delivery in the poorest provinces. Each of these SIPs, as they are called, comprise of a large number of specific infrastructure components programs. And as a leading development finance institution, the DBSA has a key role to play in harnessing its human and financial capital in new and innovative ways to support the National Infrastructure Development Plan. Chair, during the previous financial year, the bank repositioned itself as a center of excellence for infrastructure development, complementing its ongoing work in local government with new initiatives and partnerships with various national departments to accelerate and deepen delivery in the key priority sectors of education, health, transport, and human settlements. During this year that we're looking forward to, the DBSA will pursue its expanded development drive with a sharp focus on accelerated, integrated, innovative, and innovative infrastructure development. On the financing front, the bank has targeted an infrastructure investment disbursement of 6.9 billion for the coming financial year. In addition to the bank's current development activities, which will continue as previously, a series of mandates have also been agreed and signed to, by the DBSA to implement and support the financing of infrastructure in key priority areas such as health, energy and water, and sanitation. The rollout of national programs could result in additional bank-wide infrastructure funding between 50 billion and 60 billion rands over the medium to long term. As you are aware, Chair, that the Minister has entrusted the DBSA with the responsibility to establish and manage the 9 billion rand jobs fund. I'm pleased to report, Chair, that the jobs fund is progressing well with 2,651 proposals, as previously reported, that were received during the first call, and grant funding to the value of 1.8 billion having been approved, which is this just close to the 2 billion we had intended to disperse. Second call for proposals has commenced, and we are looking forward to a good progress in this regard now that it is the second round. Chair, I would, before I hand over to the Chief Executive of the DBSA, Mr. Tikli Ntshontsho, to in Zulu, this is just the inverse of Congo, and to present the bank's corporate plan and elaborate further, let me take this opportunity to introduce to you the team led by the chairperson, Mr. Jabulani Philip Moloketi, and the acting chief executive, Mr. T.P. Ntshontsho. You want to indicate by show of face or show of hand? Yeah. And Ms. Sinazo Sibisi, group executive, Mr. Luther Mashaba, group executive, SA operations, Dr. Paul Kibuka, MD Development Fund, and Mr. Johan Conradi, acting company secretary. And on my right, I've got Mr. Lefense Radigeledi, who is the director of DFIs in the National Treasury. Chair, that is the team. I'm now going to allow the chief executive to walk us through the corporate plan. TP.
Chairperson of the committee, honorable members of the committee, Deputy Minister Nene, and the chairman of the DBSA board, thank you very much this morning. I will now seek to provide a bit more detail on the key messages that the Deputy Minister has touched on. First of all, Chairperson, this particular first slide in our presentation is simply a recap of how the Development Bank of Southern Africa has progressively changed over the past couple of years. The relevance of this particular slide, Chairperson and committee members, is really the fact that the scope of activity of the Development Bank has over the past few years increased significantly. From the early days around 2000, when the organization was primarily just a lender, mainly to municipalities, to the time around 2006 to 2010, when it started playing an additional role of providing institutional capacity and implementation support, mainly to municipalities, to a point where today, as the Deputy Minister indicated, we are seeking to establish the organization as a center of excellence for infrastructure development, not only talking to the municipal space, but addressing all national sector programs around water, energy, transportation, information and communications technology, health, education, housing, and so on. The next slide, Chairperson, all that we need to underline in this slide is that we are providing assurance to this particular committee that the sustainability of the Development Bank remains paramount, and that this particular sustainability is underpinned by the investment that we make in terms of the loans that we make, as well as equity investments that we make, in order to ensure that the organization has the financial resources to continue to execute its mandate. Further on, the organization carefully manages its cost base so that we remain within prudential levels of cost relative to income, so that at the end of each financial year, the institution realizes a surplus which enables it to continue its operations into subsequent years. And indeed, lastly, ensuring that we maintain a sound state of health in the form of a balance sheet, which then enables the DBSA to access capital in the open market, which can then be deployed for infrastructure development. Chairperson, the DBSA is mainly known for its activities in the municipal finance space, and this particular slide is simply an overview of how, for purposes of operational convenience, we have segmented the municipal space, where we are aware that we operate with the major metropolitan municipalities, and then we have a set of what can be regarded as secondary cities, sort of your second tier municipalities, and then a large number of municipalities that are really poor, rural, and very often without a solid economic base. And the key message is that we are underlining here, Chairperson, as the Deputy Minister touched on, is that yes, infrastructure backlogs continue to be dominant and unabating, and the need for social and economic development remains very high in these various municipalities. However, what we have observed also through our own activities and research is the fact that secondary as well as under-resourced municipalities are particularly hard hit for reasons of the fact that these municipalities very often don't have strong economic bases, very often are unable to attract the kind of skills that they need to be able to run their institutions. So progressively, it looks like there's need for really special interventions to address that part of the segment of the economy. What we have seen, Chairperson, as another trend is that increasingly, particularly post-2008-09 financial crisis, there has been an increasing appetite in the level of commercial bank debt, mainly from the metro paper. There's been an increasing volume of financial advances or lending or loans by private commercial banks to the metro areas of the municipal sector. We are just underlining, Chairperson, in the next slide, the DBSA's continued commitment to serve these municipalities, and the picture that we are trying to paint here is that increasingly with metros, we are seeing a trend where we are lending less as DBSA to the metro sector, but we are providing expertise regarding the planning and the long-term planning and project-level planning. Because as I just indicated a few minutes ago, increasingly they are able to raise debt on their own from the open markets. Secondary municipalities as well, there we do a lot of project development and preparation work, complemented by funding as well from ourselves. Lastly, in under-resourced municipalities, really what we see there is mainly our activities that have been undertaken up to now by our development fund, stroke the Zamanje team, around capacity building and capacity support for the actual implementation of projects, so that fiscal allocations that are made to these municipalities are spent. And that is the nature of our support framework at the moment in broad terms to the municipalities. The next slide, Chairperson, what we are seeking to paint here is the point that the Minister, Deputy Minister was making now, i.e. that the DBSA indeed has grown not only to become a municipal finance bank, but to become an infrastructure bank which works across all national infrastructure sectors. As I indicated, around energy, around roads, around transportation, water, and so on. The pie chart at the top of the slide here indicates what our current distribution of exposure is. The DBSA's loan book in total, Chairperson, at the moment is somewhere just under 40 billion rand. And that money is invested in percentage terms across these sectors, which are water, transportation, energy, education, and so on and so on. What we are saying in the table below, Chairperson, is that going forward, and indeed very much aligned to the national infrastructure plans of the country, what we are going to see is an increased involvement by the Development Bank in the health sector, particularly in the public-private partnerships where we are working with the Department of Health, in the water and sanitation space where we have a memorandum of agreement with the Department of Water Affairs and working closely with the TCTA. Also, our involvement in a substantial way, and we can provide details as we go along, in the renewable energy space where we are supporting independent power producers with the Department of Energy, and indeed the transportation infrastructure development program, which will be primarily led by Transnet for expansion of rail systems and ports. We are also seeing a role for the DBSA in that space going forward. Chairperson, the next slide provides a bit of detail on the point that I was just making now, which is that the Development Bank, in support of various national departments, has entered into formalized development partnerships or development mandates. For instance, in the area of energy, where since the beginning of 2010, we worked closely with the Department of Energy for the preparation of the bid processes, which culminated in the Department of Energy going to market last year in August to procure independent power producers. We were very close and working together with the Department of Energy in preparation for what we eventually saw happen towards the end of last year and the announcements of the successful bidders which were made in COP17 last year. The same work we are doing with the Department of Health, where the Minister of Health has designated about six or so hospitals that he and his department would like to implement in the form of public-private partnerships. And we are working to undertake the feasibility work, the institutional and the financial modeling of those projects. And we are hoping that during the course of this year, at least we will be taking at least two of those projects to market for actual implementation. And the same goes for the other areas around water and human settlement. Chairperson, the Deputy Minister touched on the activities of the Jobs Fund. This particular slide is simply a reflection of what has happened over the past financial year, and my colleague Dr. Paul Kibuka is here. He's the one who runs the Development Fund. Indeed, the overview is that close to 2,600 applications received, and they went through an assessment process, and at the end of it all, about 1.8 billion or so of funding was allocated for this past financial year. And by mesh funding there, Chairperson, is that we are upholding the principle in the Jobs Fund where it is required that each and every project which is presented for consideration, the sponsors or the owners of that project should also be making a contribution to the capital requirements of that project. Sort of for each 1 rand that is drawn from the Jobs Fund, hopefully there's also 1 rand or more on the part of the promoters of the project, so that we achieve a better scale. So these are the projects that have been approved up to now, and indeed it is our estimate that when these projects begin to be implemented, somewhere in the region of 180,000 or so jobs will be created. There is a monitoring and evaluation framework that has been put in place, which will be tracking these implementations so that we can come back to the nation and report on the job creation impacts of the Jobs Fund. Moving into this new financial year, Chairperson, Members of the committee might be aware that a couple of weeks ago we opened the second window of applications for the Jobs Fund for this year coming. And it is open for 2 months to the end of May. So members of the public at the moment and promoters of projects are submitting their application through the system that has been explained when the launch of the Development Fund was made. But the details are also available on the DBSA website. The next slide, Chairperson, is an indication of our operations in the rest of the SADC region outside South Africa. As the committee knows, is aware that in terms of the DBSA Act, not only do we provide development finance in South Africa, but we also provide development finance in the 15 states of the SADC region. And indeed, our levels of lending and development support differs from nation or from country to country, depending on the circumstances of operations in the various countries. Some of the countries perhaps relatively easier to operate, some of the countries much more challenging and difficult given the circumstances around these countries. But indeed, if we talk about matters of regional integration, issues of energy as well as information technology as well as road and infrastructure projects do dominate the pipeline of the projects that we are considering in various countries across the SADC region. This particular slide, Chairperson, is just a quick overview, which is an indication that there is an intent and there are ongoing discussions, an intent on the part of the DBSA board to lead the organization to reach out beyond the SADC region in terms of its operations, in line with the country's objectives for regional integration and indeed also taking into account the economic interests of the country to trade more, not only with SADC, but the rest of the continent indeed. And therefore, it is contemplated and the discussions and the preparation work has been done for the creation of a special purpose entity of some sort, which is connected to the DBSA, which will lead our charge really into the rest of sub-Saharan Africa. And then the next slide, Chairperson, which is the last slide really, is just an overview that the DBSA, under the BRICS framework, as the committee probably knows, has been designated as one of the development banks to cooperate with other development banks under the BRICS framework. Our focus as an organization is primarily around increasing the pool of development money that is available under for capital markets and increasing development finance to the region. But also the second leg is on the extreme right of the slide, which is to provide instruments for promoting trade across the continent. These particular initiatives are in early stage. Not much detail has emerged on these issues, and there is a team within the DBSA which is working to flush out the final details of how the DBSA will support the country's activities and programs under the BRICS framework. Chairperson, with those few words, thank you very much. This is an overview of the DBSA's planned activities for the coming year, the details of which are contained in a detailed corporate plan, which I hope the members were served with. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Acting CEO. Indeed, the Deputy Minister has helped me to know how to pronounce your name. I've been struggling to say, is it Nchoncho or Nchoncho? Okay. Deputy Minister, any other thing? Okay. Honorable members, or Chair, are you okay? Okay. Honorable members, we have the presentation before us. Questions of clarity, comments? Honorable Luyenge, Honorable Madamini, Honorable Paris, and then you'll be followed by Honorable Van Rooyen, in that order. Ross? Okay, fine.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first appreciate the elaborate and precise report that we have been given, and also commend the institution for ensuring that we get the documents in good time. Chair, the issues that I would want to get clarity on, one is around the internal capacity in the institution to ensure that the set goals are achieved, and also the retention strategy in the institution. Secondly, Chair, the municipal project development plan that they have, one would ask as to whether the municipalities, especially the rural ones, have the necessary expertise that can be developed further in order to be commensurate to what the bank seeks to achieve. So in instances where you get municipalities that are not able to be assisted, do you have maybe a mega plan that seeks to ensure that those communities in the jurisdiction of such municipalities are actually assisted? I've came across some projects, like in the Nelson Mandela metropolitan area, which I think also the Buffalo City, the Amalinda projects, which are visible, where we've seen such projects. But one gets worried about the municipalities like Nyandini in the Owar Tambo, in the Alfred Njo district in Matatiel, where there hasn't been much improvement in terms of infrastructure development. How best can the bank assist to ensure that when you get into the Eastern Cape, especially on the other side of the River Kai, you can see that there is much difference to the mostly developed areas like your East London towards Port Elizabeth. But once you cross the River Kai, Butterworth towards Cockstead, you can see that there is no development that is there. Can't you maybe come up with a strategy that will actually see those municipalities in such rural areas getting closer to where the other areas are in terms of what you have done? I thank you, sir.
Madame.
Thank you, Chair. I would also like to thank the Deputy Minister and his team for the presentation. My clarity, Chair, it goes to page 18 under Investment Banking Division of the Big Book. The acting CEO has indicated that other than from the previous mandate, the other mandate is to ensure that there is institutional support and capacity building, which we appreciate. But however, if you look at bullet number 2, the large scale infrastructure of the page 18, I do understand that those are the projects that what the bank is saying, but I fail to understand the programs that will assist us or as the Parliament to understand how are you going to achieve those projects. Where are the programs for those projects? That's the question. And if they are in review, the previous programs, did you achieve them? Were they achievable? Were they measurable? If not so, now that you're going to review them or they're in progress of reviewing, what is the way forward towards that? How far are you? Can we be able as the committee to go through that and understand exactly what programs are in place? Indeed, Deputy Minister, through you, Chair, we do appreciate the support that has been given by the DBSA to our municipalities, but it also worries that this grant fund that is always being given by the DBSA to our municipalities, I face to identify the monitoring tools after you have given the grant fund. Yes, you receive the application. Within the application, does each municipality that has applied for the grant fund indicate exactly why they are applying for this grant fund? If so, then what is the monitoring tool by the DBSA so that we understand that the money given, the money requested, was utilized for proper or for the need that has been applied for? When you talk about the training of municipality officials, at what level do you start from the mayor to at what level? And what about those secondary municipalities? How far have you gone with that support and that capacity? Thank you, Honorable Chair.
TP.
The whip will excuse me for paraphrasing here, but he likes to... Sorry, let me first say thank you for the presentation, of course. But the whip likes to talk about the departments, I think, being like a drama society where everybody is acting. Now, we have a similar issue with the chief executive of the DBSA. Is it? Did I get it wrong?
No, he's just confirming that it is...
So it's attributed to the whip. But, of course, it's concerning to us in the committee here. My question is, why did the former CE, Mr. Baloy, leave? And what is the time frame for his replacement appointment? And then also in that regard, the media reports about the prospects of Mr. Mo Sheikh joining as head of the international division. What is the status of the post of that international division? And what are the appointment procedures for a role such as that in the DBSA? Have any interviews been held? What experience is required for that position? And lastly, is or was Mr. Mo Sheikh a candidate for that post? And then, Chair, with regard to the jobs fund, I note that I did a quick calculation. It's around 60,000 Rand per job, which is actually relatively good. I think as far as government's proposals go, the only one that's better than that is the youth wage subsidy, but it's a lot cheaper than many other job-creating proposals. So it certainly has our support, particularly because it matches what requires matching by the private sector. My question is the Deputy Minister said that they were targeting or that they disbursed 1.8 billion already last year. But I've read that the target for next year is 5 billion. I think it was the head of the program who was quoted in the press saying 5 billion for this year. To me, that sounds quite ambitious, given that you would imagine the low-hanging fruit would come in the first round. And if we disburse 2 billion, which is a fair performance, I fail to see how the DBSA can scale that up to around 5 billion. It sounds overly ambitious to me. And then also reported was the fact that the second round was going to end at the end of April, and there was some alarm in the press about that being too short a time frame. I note that the acting CE said it would be the end of May. Can you just comment on the actual deadline for the second round? And then whether you agree with my assumption that if you do this thing in rounds, you're going to get the low-hanging fruit early on. I'm interested in how we're planning to scale up the spend even as the proposals perhaps become more marginal. I remember 2 years ago that we had the DBSA before my former committee, which was the Select Committee on Finance, and there was a proposal at that time to disallow related party transactions in the DBSA. There was going to be a reform of the corporate governance, and that was committed to. I'm interested into whether that happened, because I gather there were some historical issues there. Has the corporate governance been reviewed to disallow related party transactions? And then my last question, Chair, the shift in lending on page 4 from metro to under-resourced municipalities. I can see why that's something that's needed, but surely it will have a material effect on the risk profile. I mean, the ability of a metro to repay the DBSA has got to be considerably higher than a marginal municipality. Chair, sorry, if I may just ask one more. I appreciate the commitment for the push into Africa, and I believe towards the end of the slides there was some summary of what the plan is. My concern about this, and it has my full support, my concern is that it's 10 years too late, and that perhaps when we were in Parliament making speeches about the African Renaissance and talking about the potential of African renewal 10 to 15 years ago, when the rest of the world wasn't aware of it, that was our opportunity. My concern is that now Africa's in the headlines from investors, fund managers, the whole world is talking about the potential of Africa, and now we're only focusing on expanding out there. I accept the plan given on page 9, but how does it compare to what we've been doing in Africa for the past 10 years, and shouldn't we actually have been active there then when we had a real advantage, rather than now when we're trying to compete with the rest of the world?
Honourable Sandroya.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also start by welcoming the presentation. Chair, maybe as an observation, to me it will be very interesting if at some stage we'll pause and just take stock of the impact of all the interventions that the DBSA has done into municipalities. Going beyond just how many people have been trained and how many people have been sent, I mean, to assist some of these municipalities. I think to me that will be an interesting assessment. Well, on the same breath, looking into the development fund on the municipal capacity building and implementation, it's cited here that DBSA is targeting for financial year 2012-13 to have 6 municipalities with non-performing loans supported with the development of turnaround strategy. And obviously, one would expect that number will decrease in the following financial year. But the opposite is reflected here. It's 8 for 2013-2014. It's 10 for 2014-2015. What does this suggest? Does it suggest that we are expecting more municipalities to be turned around? Or exactly what does this suggest? I'm a bit confused by these figures. And also, Chair, in the same program of development fund, if you look into Vulindlela Academy, the intake rate there, for the 3 financial year consecutively, that is from 2012 to 2015, the DBSA is targeting to have an intake of 10,000 consistently. Now, I'm a bit concerned of what are the variables that inform these figures. What is it that you are considering to come to this simple conclusion? Is it because maybe you are looking at the backlog that is facing that area, or maybe you are looking at the financial muscle of the institution? Really, that question cuts across all these other figures that are given in this development fund table. As to why do you come to the conclusion of such numbers? Certainly, Chair, Of course, I mean, this issue of numbers will keep on coming because you are targeting to have as part of your knowledge sharing exercise. Highly appreciated. You are targeting to have 6 round tables dialogue conducted in 2012-2013 financial year. Obviously, one might also ask, why 6? Is it a focused dialogue, or is just a dialogue targeted as maybe the financial provision of the institution? But also what is interesting is that I've observed with interest, the chair and members and also deputy minister, that in some cases or in some instances, MPs are not considered to be critical role players when we come to this dialogue session. I'm not sure what is the approach of DDC, because I don't remember us being invited to be part of that dialogue session. Your procurement policy, not unless I haven't picked it up in your document, your procurement policy is very silent around your targets. How is it assisting us as a country, I mean, to realize our developmental objective? But I'm very much interested to know, because beyond just a BEE requirement as outlined in government policy, I'm very much interested to know how DBSA is ensuring that suppliers, more especially those who came from previously disadvantaged communities or the intended beneficiaries of BEE, are nurtured or maybe are developed in such a way that they are able to continue to provide services in a sustainable and a competitive fashion. An example can be made of the resin scheme that has been launched by ESCOM, where, I mean, suppliers, the ESCOM is going just beyond the issue of appointing those who comply in terms of PE, but they nurture, they develop this particular supplier so as they don't fail, because with the wisdom of hindsight, it is very clear that for historical reasons, our people are unable to continue to participate in this space, I mean, sustainably. I would be very much interested to know what is your approach as DBSA in this, on this aspect. And also, Chair, you are, in as far as your funding plan and borrowing program is concerned, I've picked up that your borrowing requirements will be at a region of 9.8 billion in 2015. And this is lower than the 2014, you know, which will be at 10.3 billion. I will be very much interested what will be the reasons, because looking at a developmental backlog that we are faced with, one is expecting an upward trend when we come to borrow, or maybe it's how we're going to manage aspects of your debt book. I'm not sure, but I will be very much interested if one is taken on board. Lastly, Chair, BRICS, it is said that in the recent engagement of BRICS, there is an intention to establish what is referred to as, I don't know if they resolved on that, but the media reported that they are intending to establish a development bank or a development institution just for the BRICS countries. So I will be very much excited to get the take of DBSA on that aspect. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Ross, you are the last. Hi, Deputy Minister and CEO, I've decided to allow members to ask as many questions as possible, so that we don't run into the same problems that we had yesterday, where people had to work over lunch, and I was accused of being a dictator.
Thank you, Honorable Dictator, for allowing me to just finish it off. Thank you, Chair. Yes, I'd be very interested to know the role that you envisage for the DBSA as a centre of excellence in terms of the infrastructure build. And we recently saw that there was a meeting in, I think it was in Boksburg, with the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee. And I'd be interested to know whether the DBSA, of course, were present. I assume that you were present on the meeting. My concern, however, is that to broaden the base of funding and financing, and perhaps the role that the private sector should play, I'm not sure if the private sector was present at the summit held by, I think, the Deputy President hosted the summit. And I would like to know whether you would perhaps find it appropriate to make a recommendation that that the private sector should also be involved in the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee and not only be invited to the Presidential Summit later for businesses to be part of the infrastructure build that we envisage, and that would be the main focus for the next couple of years. I think it's general knowledge that the state can't go it alone, that we might need the private sector, and perhaps your views on how the private sector could be involved, so it would be very useful. Then in terms of the infrastructure backlogs, I think my colleagues alluded to that, the municipalities, which is hugely problematic, the 158 under-resourced municipalities, it's regarding the funding models of those municipalities, financially not viable, and using perhaps tariffs to fund some of the expenses. That's why sometimes we have extraordinary increase in electricity tariffs, and we know that electricity is more the funding model for municipalities sometimes to fund all the other expenses, subsidize those expenses. But my question would be regarding the accountability and to, like what the previous presenter said, that the fiscal allocations should be spent to see that we get implementation on the spending, the monitoring and the mechanism schedules to ensure accountability in that regard. And I'm quite pleased to see that there's also a focus on the smaller municipalities, because we see that in many of the smaller towns we see a deterioration of civilized standards, so to speak, and we really need to step that up. And if the DBSA in their various roles can also make a contribution, I think it would be most helpful. Just regarding the energy problem on the distribution lines, if we talk about infrastructure funding and the distribution has been problematic for such a long time, I think the backlogs in distribution is about, could be very close to 40 billion now. It was 32.6 billion 2 years ago, with ever increasing losses on the networks. And the funding seems to be hugely problematic. The best that we've heard from in the Energy Portfolio Committee was that the Financial and Fiscal Commission proposed a once-off conditional grant, and I don't think that's acceptable for banks. But I think if the DBSA can apply their minds as how this could be funded, because there's a constitutional problem that the networks belongs to the municipalities, and municipalities seem to think that they're not responsible for maintaining the networks because Eskom is selling the power, and that's a national competency. And that is an area where I think the DBSA could also, in terms of funding, make a huge contribution. I'm very pleased in terms of energy that the IPPs has taken off well, and it seems to be well managed, and I think it's perhaps a little bit too late, but taking supply constraints at this point in time, but I think it's a step in the right direction. The health, the six hospitals, the private-public partnerships, I think it's a magnificent step in the right direction. I would just like to know perhaps implementation dates, and I'm quite sure this could also afford some relief in terms of the cost of the National Health Plan, perhaps to see how this works, and it could be also a step in the right direction, and I think the DBSA has a huge role to play in terms of this. I would just like, I think there were six projects that you've mentioned, implementation dates, and perhaps we will see the first rollout. The problem with the water infrastructure, which is hugely problematic, is especially the sewage purification works in mostly all over the country, and I've read that the Minister of Water Affairs even indicated that it should be privately managed, and that is the neglect that we're talking about in terms of maintaining those infrastructure. Will the DBSA play a major role in funding also these projects and perhaps monitoring and compliance to ensure that compliance situation? Thank you, Chair. That's a few comments from me. Thank you.
Thank you. Back to you, Honorable Deputy Minister and your team.
Let me first allow the chairperson and the chief executive, and then I will deal with whatever remains. And I trust that they will deal with the more difficult ones again, and leave the easier ones. Then.
You always said.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and thanks to the honourable members for raising issues that clearly indicate that we share genuine and mutual concerns. I'll start with the first issue. I'll take them not in the manner in which they were raised. The issues around the challenge of shifting funding from a fairly developed metro to needy municipalities. The point was made, which is something that we acknowledge, that also increases the risk of default. That's true. You know? But I think we should step back and begin to understand what is the role of a development bank. The role of the development bank, first and foremost, is to move into those areas where development is completely necessary and make those interventions and take the risks that your ordinary commercial funders might not be ready to take. And I think that is our specific role. And we understand that it comes with risks. And hence our interaction with the shareholder representative, National Treasury, to begin to address those risks. You know that we are blind to the risk, we fully understand the risk. The second thing that I think a development bank must also begin to pat itself on the back is when the private sector moves into those municipalities. Not so long ago, the Joburgs of this world were not looked upon. Yeah. We were making business with them. Now we've reached a point where the ordinary commercial funding institutions are moving into those areas. It's about time that we also exit, because our job is done, you know. The key thing, we position ourselves to crowd in private sector, not to crowd out the private sector or to compete directly with private sector. And I think that is one of the important things that we should understand around the role of the development bank. Though it might be nice, what you call the A-list type of municipalities in your book, you know, but that's not what we brag about. What we talk about is developmental impact, which is a point that has been raised. You know, and I think that's one of the things. The second area that I would like to touch is an issue around, which was raised by Honorable Dr. Lieg. It's an issue around new mandate issues of capacity. It's something that the board focuses on, because, you know, this institution of the DBSA has been there for many years. But what we have seen is that with that institution, the mandates have changed, as the acting CEO has clearly indicated. And the change of mandate, by necessity, means it's either you have to retrain people that are currently in there or begin to look at the broader market for the provision of the needed skills. That we are doing at this point. We are also very, very mindful that when you talk about ourselves being a bank of infrastructure excellence, that we need certain specific skills that are currently not resident within the DBSA. But having said that, the DBSA, we have quite depth in terms of skills. You know, this is an acting CEO. He's been with the DBSA for many, many years. You know, he's taken the challenge of leading this bank during this period. You could think that he's been around for a very, very long time as a CEO. And that brings me to the question of acting CEO. Paul left the bank, you know, at the end of March. That was his last day, you know. So we've not been, a cast of acting, you know. TP has been acting from the 1st of April. And the question is, how long is TP going to be acting? We have put in place mechanisms, headhunter, to look for the position of the CEO. I'll come to the one of international. And hopefully, you know, we'll be interviewing before the end of May. And hopefully it is our wish that by July we'll have a fully fledged, maybe not so brand new, CEO in the Development Bank of Southern Africa. And I think it's quite important, you know, to understand that the processes are in place. They're led by the committees of the board to search for the CEO. Because searching for the CEO is one of the primary responsibilities of the board in terms of managing succession. the departure of our CEO is something that as a board we regret, but he left to pursue his own personal interest. And I think it's quite important to understand that. Human beings in South Africa, it's a place of opportunity, and to a large extent, at one point or the other, people decide to pursue their careers beyond the institution that they are serving. And I think we should grant Mr. Baloyi that opportunity to do so and not bemoan the whole issue that is left in the bank. Coming to the whole area of the international, which has made media, for some reason, which has generally generated some media attention. You know, the post of international in the DBSA, they set a division whose main task is to look at our business beyond the borders of the Republic of South Africa. And I think as the DBSA, we have always been saying it's important for us to find candidates for this post. But I'll just talk about the recent. Recently, among the things that we've done in search of the senior executives of the bank, we have also put in place a headhunter to look for this post of the divisional head. So it's a process that is running. And every South African has a right who thinks that they are competent enough to be chief, to be executives, group executives of the DBSA, has a right to apply. And I don't think there could be any ways of disqualifying people for whatever reason, other than if there is an issue that could be raised that borders on criminality or whatever. But I think we should always, as South Africans, act in keeping with our Bill of Rights to say every individual has a right to compete for any post, in this instance, in the DBSA. And we've opened up the process, both for internal candidates and external candidates. Soon, hopefully, we'll be able to also to announce who has been the successful candidate to fill that post. Your specific question, whether or not Mr. Sheikh has the right to apply, I would answer it, yes, it does, as a South African. Like any of us who are sitting around this table who might decide that they want to compete for it. And I think it's quite important for us to understand that with the heat that is in the media, to a large extent, I don't know where the justification is beyond just speculation, you know. So that is where we are in as far as those two areas are concerned. The other issue that I think would be important to raise are issues that around the role of the DBSA. You know, an important point was raised around when we talk about being this center of infrastructure excellence, you know, what is our role? What is the role of the state? What is the role of the private sector? Quite clearly, it's important to understand that even from the government side, the delivery of infrastructure is not just a solely government entity, but the role of government is to coordinate to ensure that the sequencing and the timely delivery of critical infrastructure that is linked to a broad economic growth perspective. That is the role of government. Now, what is the role of SOEs and DFIs like ourselves? It's also to come up with packages that attract the private sector, deal with matters of risk and certainty in the delivery of that infrastructure. Ultimately, it is private sector entities that are going to deliver this infrastructure. We don't have huge conglomerates that are involved in the construction industry. Ultimately, it has to come in there. The point but which is important that they're raising, that at what point do you bring in the private sector? It's the issues of timing and sequencing of the private sector involvement. What we should also understand, private sector have very specific interests that are defined by shareholder interests. You know, government has a bigger shareholder pool, which is called the South African citizen. You know, in most instances, those two don't necessarily sit very nicely side by side. So I think the timing will be determined by those who hold a broader mandate on behalf of South Africa.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Thank you. Chairperson, thank you, the board chair. If I may address a couple of questions that have been raised, and in the process of doing so, I'll also ask my colleagues, Nonzo, Paul, and Luther, maybe to take some of the issues. The first one about the capacity of the institution. We are grateful at two levels with regards to the capacity of the institution. A lot of the people who work at the Development Bank at this point in time have substantially long tenures in the organization. The rate of turnover in the organization is lower than 10%. So we don't lose staff members really in a manner that can be regarded as hemorrhaging. We are able to hang on to our skills. And in terms of replacing those that leave the organization, our recruitment processes are indeed very speedy and robust. And on a continuous basis, under the leadership of the board, particularly the board subcommittee on human resources, the retention and remuneration policy of the organization is constantly subject to review to ensure that we can draw the kind of skills that the market is able to provide, because particularly in the Gauteng area, it is highly competitive to attract your experienced MBAs and chartered accountants and engineers and people like those. But to date, we can confidently state here that, and we have the rates as I've indicated, to prove that people stay long and offer their services at the Development Bank. The next question about rural municipalities, sir, you touched on a very, very, very critical point, which indeed we are, as an organization, battling with. And what I want to mention is that we realize that we, the Development Bank of Southern Africa, alone cannot be able to address this kind of special disparities that exist between your bigger cities and your smaller cities. So the kind of approach that we are framing at the moment, we realize that in the first instance, many of these municipal institutions that you referred to, even through our intervention, we would send engineers and planners there and financial experts to assist. But the reality is that very often there are no officials to build capacity around. And so at a particular point when our intervention is withdrawn, the municipality deteriorates back. So we don't have an answer, but our initial thoughts at the moment are that we need a compact between ourselves, the Development Bank, the Department of Cooperative Governance, the provinces, as well as the National Treasury. And we have initial ideas regarding how we can position a capability, probably at a provincial level and maybe at the level of districts, which will then address these municipalities. Because it's very difficult to send an engineer to each and every small town. Rather have an aggregated capability, probably managed at the center and supported by the national ministries that are responsible, i.e. COCTA as well as the National Treasury. But we are working on that, and we are confident that we'll come up with a plan. Ma'am, your questions on page 8 of the corporate plan and how perhaps our programs, particularly in the private sector or in the investment banking area, private sector, are unfolding. Yes, our main activity has been around energy as well as water finance over the past couple of years, say over the past 2-3 years or so. We have invested already up to now, approved, and we are closing the transaction as we speak, just over 7 billion of rands in renewable energy projects. There are further projects coming through out of the IPP process in which the DBSA is likely to participate for some more. I think out of round one and round two of the renewable energy program, we are considering probably an aggregate ticket in the region of about 13 to 15 billion rands of investment as DBSA alone. Remembering that the capital requirements of that program for round one alone is somewhere in the region of 45 to 50 billion rand. So we are making a contribution in that regard. And in the transportation space, it is early days, ma'am, because up to now, yes, the transportation space from a rail perspective has largely been undertaken by Transnet. Transnet has indicated its intentions to use increasingly a private sector participation model where maybe some of the lines are concessioned or some of the assets are provided on a specialized assets and structured finance basis. And yes, we already are seeing a pipeline of projects now of private sector parties making proposals to close the gaps and to assist Transnet in its executions of its main programs. The important question about the monitoring of how the money is used, the DBSA's service value chain, ma'am, is structured in such a way that once we have approved a transaction, a loan or a grant, and we have signed the necessary agreement for that with a client, be it a municipality or a private company, there is a specialist team for monitoring and evaluation. We call it portfolio management at the DBSA. These are the people who physically track the financial flows as they go out to the clients in order to ensure that the application of money is exactly for what is intended. The question around the training of municipal officials, I don't know if, Paul, you can touch on it quickly. The training of municipal officials, what levels do we address, and in the secondary munis, what have we seen there?
Thanks very much, Chairperson, Acting CEO. The training of municipal officials is identified mainly in two areas. One, by looking at the workplace skills training plans in the municipalities. We have the Vulindlela Academy in the DBSA that works together with the municipal officials to identify that. But also, as indicated earlier, through our Sinzamanje deployment program, our employees in planning, in finance, and engineering, in the course of performing their skills transfer on job, also identified areas that need classroom training. And then based on that, would refer municipal officials that need that training to the Vulindlela Academy. And the main areas of training that we offer in the Vulindlela Academy to municipal officials is mainly in planning, in finance, in administration, in leadership, as well as going forward, we'll be looking at providing training in the technical areas, different technical areas, targeting some of the aspects that the members have addressed in the questions around blue-green drop standards, as well as process controls, and so on and so forth. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. On the jobs fund, just quickly, Honorable Member, the target for next year is not 5 billion, it's 3 billion, just to confirm that. And indeed, round two, just to confirm again what I said, is up to the end of May, so there's enough time, 2 months to be exact. To the related party transaction matter, we can confirm to this committee chairperson that the corporate governance of the organization is such that both employees, officials of the DBSA, as well as members of the board of the DBSA are governed by a governance framework that places prohibitions on related party transactions. Not only that, but even the disciplinary code of the Development Bank has been rewritten to ensure that any offense arising out of these violations will be dealt with accordingly in that regard. So there it's a solid arrangement. The chairperson of the board has responded to the matter of lending to increasingly to lower capacity municipalities and less so to metro. Just again for me to confirm that we are committed and working together with the National Treasury, we are committed to executing our lending activities in such a manner that we do not compromise the sustainability of the Development Bank. And to that extent, we are grateful to the Minister and the Deputy Minister of Finance and the team at the National Treasury for the various support measures and the mitigation measures that we constantly discuss with them and the support that they provide to us in that regard. The push into Africa may be coming too late. Well, I'm not sure about that because I think at a particular point in time, the DBSA used to be an exclusively South Africa-only institution. So I joined the bank at the time when it was beginning to increasingly do its operations in the SADC region, and I think it was a sort of progressive, step-by-step kind of approach. I think those who took that strategic view at the time will probably justify it on the basis that it was a prudent thing to do and do it in a measured way rather than perhaps in a rushed way. That's just my guess on that. You'll pardon me if I'm not responding satisfactorily. Yes, the impact of our municipalities, I took note of that. I don't know, Chairperson, perhaps we can make an offer to say, or a suggestion to say, if the overall impact activities of the DBSA around municipalities were to be assessed, perhaps we could commission that to be done sort of on an independent basis so that we don't judge ourselves. And maybe we can make a proposal to the board as to how that could be done. Again, at this point in time, I'll just pass on to my colleague, Paul Kibuka. Paul, the question was around the turnaround strategies, you know, the numbers that are in the plan. That's the first issue. The intake numbers at Vulindlela, our rationale for doing so. Those were the two questions.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Tingsi. Chair, the numbers in the balance scorecard on the six municipalities supported. That indicator was targeting our support to the investment business of the bank, namely the South Africa operations. And because it's an internal investment support for turnaround, what we did was to assess on average how many municipalities the workout unit of the bank does support in terms of turnaround of our investments, especially Chair, looking at distressed municipalities that we've lent to that may struggle to pay back our loans. On average, Chair, we have about 10 municipalities a year that the workout unit does provide support to. And as we may have seen in the corporate plan, we are looking at now directly providing support to the workout unit in terms of institutional aspects, in terms of financial aspects of turnaround of those municipalities. What we were looking at, while they support 10 a year, we were going to begin at a lower scale of about 6, supporting them from 6, upscaling to 8, and then ramping up to 10. We were also looking at increasing this number going forward because of what the acting CEO indicated earlier, that we are looking at increasing our support to under-resourced municipalities. So we were foreseeing a number of municipalities going into distress because of the capacity at that level. And our focus was that we need to provide as much institutional capacity support as possible and looking at being in a position to contain those numbers when they arise. Chair, there's also recognition, and I think one needs to mention, that the Sianzamaji program has now been handed back to the Mandate Authority of Government. It has been handed over, split, the technical aspects have gone back to COGTA, and now incorporated into the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency, MISA. While the financial aspects have been handed back to National Treasury under the Municipal Finance Improvement Program. What we're also looking at in terms of upscaling our support to municipalities is to collaborate with the departments that have got these deployments to ensure that we share that capacity that is sitting and existing in municipalities as a follow-up on the Sianzamaji program capabilities. Chair, just to move on to the VA, Vulindlela Academy, numbers. I've already started touching on them as I responded to the first question. To say that the way we arrive at those targets, first of all, we work with the municipalities to assess their workplace skills development plans and determine where the skills training needs in those municipalities. And by our nature, we focus mainly on the under-resourced municipalities and the secondary municipalities. We, however, also do support metros where applications are received. The other issue, Chair, that I also mentioned earlier was that given our deployment program, we also had the opportunity of engaging in the on-job skills transfer to officials by our deployments in the technical, finance, and planning. And in the course of doing that, Chair, we are able to pick up gaps in terms of the officials that we support for on-the-job training. And we refer those officials also to the Vulindlela Academy. In the past financial year, Chair, as members may have read from the corporate plan, we also had the opportunity to support the National Counselor Induction Program in partnership with Salgan and COGTA. But they are also now already identified follow-up training programs on the Counselor Induction Program that the government departments, including Salga, have identified as areas that the Vulindlela Academy should target. Chair, these three sources of information have assisted us to come to those numbers. And we've agreed that those numbers, in terms of the strategy, should be held constant at about 10,000 after our modeling. Because also another factor that we've had to consider is the availability of funding to fund this training. Mainly our main sources are the local government CETA. They have given us a projection of their funding, which levels out in the next 3 years. But also referrals, but also transfers from the DBSA itself. And putting all of this together, Chair, we arrived at that number as we see in the corporate plan. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Paul. Just to observe that we take the point that the Honourable Member is making, i.e. in our corporate plans going forward to provide notes and indents, you know, to provide rationale for the numbers that are indicated in the business plan so that we describe how they were derived and so on. We will do that. If I can just finish off quickly before I hand over to the chairman of the board. With regard to the procurement policy, Chairperson, I just want to describe that with regards to projects, what we should remember is that the DBSA is a financier to an institution. So we would give money to a municipality or to a state-owned enterprise or to a private company. And it is that client entity which then undertakes the actual procurement of the engineering and construction services. However, our board, particularly the subcommittee on investments and credit, is very, very, very much insistent on us as an organization making sure that we instill and insist that as part of our loan agreements or funding agreements, that these client entities embrace the procurement, empowerment, and enterprise development objectives of the country. That's why even in the IPP program, and the Department of Energy can talk to that, as we advance money, we require clarity regarding commitments that project owners make as to how communities in the Northern Cape and the Eastern Cape, wherever the projects are located, how communities are going to benefit, job creation impact, enterprise development, as well as empowerment. But we can only influence it through our financing arrangement because we don't do the procurement ourselves. With regards to our funding plan, yes, I think the numbers are derived out of our plans for the lending and investment activities. The numbers tend to vary from year to year, Chairperson, and we try and manage them within certain prudential limits as set by the Treasury regarding the levels of gearing that we can take and so on and so on. Just quickly, Chairperson, to round off, yes, we attended the Presidential Infrastructure Commission. My understanding, Honourable Member, is that the private sector has definitely been invited to be a participant in the entire program. That was the message that was conveyed by the ministers that run the PICC subcommittees. However, the private sector is being requested to come in now that we are at an implementation phase. The actual strategic planning was handled by the cabinet through the subcommittees under the PICC. Backlogs, yes, funding models, yeah, I think I touched on that one, that it is difficult in low-capacity municipalities in line with what I said, the kind of initiatives that we would want to take. Yes, incidentally, Honourable Member, with regards to distribution, the distribution level in electricity, the Department of Energy has actually invited us to come and have a conversation regarding how we can work together for the execution of that specialized grant for upgrading of distribution sector assets in the electricity value chain. Because upfront, Eskom is investing in generation, Eskom is investing in transmission, but at the distribution level, that is where the problems are. Yes, already we are working practically with the Department of Energy on that. The PPPs, just quickly, out of the six, Chairperson, we are hoping to take at least two to market during the course of this calendar year to December. They are in final stages of feasibility at the moment. As per the PPP process, they have to go through the approval gates at the National Treasury as well as the Department of Health. Yes, we take the point that you're making, sir, with regards to sanitation problems around water. We haven't really addressed that one on an aggressive basis, and I think we take the guidance from yourself regarding perhaps sharpening our involvement there. At this point in time, can I ask Snazo just to comment on two issues, Snazo? How we see the Center of Excellence concept, and just quickly the round tables that we have convened previously around policy discussions and how we have handled those. Is that okay? And then we will conclude, Chair, in our response by giving back to the Chairman of the Board to talk on the matter of BRICS as well as our Africa involvement. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting CEO. With regard to the Center of Excellence concept, what has become increasingly clear to us as DBSA is that given the major challenges, not just within South Africa but also the continent in terms of accelerating infrastructure delivery and also accelerating the quality thereof, we needed to move beyond being a traditional financer just focused on targeting particular projects or working in particular institutions, to start saying how do we basically address challenges in the whole value chain. One of the key challenges, clearly, as we all know, is around planning. And this is not just in terms of project planning and project preparation, but also in terms of planning an integrated infrastructure program that has effective developmental impact. What do we mean by effective developmental impact? Effective developmental impact spatially. For example, we've heard many instances where you build a new school, but there's no water or electricity connection because it's not an integrated approach. The growth of our cities is in a very inefficient and unstructured manner, which means that you have continuous urban sprawl, which has a major challenge in terms of providing services to outlying areas, but also major challenges in terms of the fiscal base and the sustainability, impact on economic growth issues within our major cities as key engines of growth and so on and so forth. Also, in terms of a more effective developmental impact, the kind of upstream and downstream multiplier effects have become minimized. For example, if you look at the rollout of infrastructure on the African continent, that is a major opportunity if you drive local content to start looking at how you improve the support for certain key industries, particularly manufacturing industries, how you begin, particularly in the renewable energy space, to begin to actually massify new technologies and so on and so forth. So the way we plan for infrastructure needs to be far more strategic. So we said as a development bank that when we consider our role in the infrastructure space, we shouldn't just focus on the projects, but we should start in terms of assisting key departments, assisting even regional economic communities, and assisting NAPID and AU processes in terms of planning for infrastructure better, then moving on within a clear integrated plan to look at more support in terms of project preparation to accelerate delivery there too, but also being involved in terms of how you package it so you make these projects more bankable. And just linking to the point about everybody now basically rushing into Africa to see what opportunities there exist, ironically, in terms of the infrastructure space, you still have a continuous lament around the fact that on one level, financiers are saying there are no bankable projects. On another level, various countries are saying that they can't find access to finance for key infrastructure projects and priorities. So the issue of packaging and the process of project preparation is actually very key, and not just in that space, but also in terms of our space as well. And how you maximize the involvement of the private sector, but in taking forward developmental objectives. Chair, the other key problem is, again, comes through in terms of this committee, is the issue then of how you make sure there's effective implementation of those projects once you've actually financed them. So we've, again, had to get far more involved in terms of supporting our clients. One, in terms of monitoring implementation, and depending on the institutional capacity within the client, in terms of actually helping the client implement the project in an effective and efficient manner. So essentially, as DBSA, therefore, we're having to play a far more strategic role in working across the value chain to accelerate delivery of infrastructure within South Africa and also across the continent. So when we basically aspire to be a center of excellence, we aspire to be a center of excellence, one, in terms of accelerating delivery, two, in terms of enhancing developmental impact, and three, in terms of making sure the interventions are sustainable in the sense that we also build long-term institutional capacity to take these matters forward. As the chairperson of the board and also the acting CE has indicated, obviously we're not there yet. We still have some way to go in terms of looking at our current processes, our level of talent within the organization, to build on the capacities we have to make sure that we identify any key gaps, and we also make sure that we basically build our overall capacity to play that role. But we certainly are moving in that direction, Chairperson. And we're confident that we can begin to improve our impact in that way. Lastly, in terms of the issue of policy roundtables and how they've been organized, we have a number of different roundtables and dialogues. We have an infrastructure dialogue series that we run with different departments, be it Department of Water Affairs, Energy, etc. We usually invite a number of different constituencies to those dialogues, depending on the topic, but it's usually a mix of people from academia, people from government departments, key experts, sometimes international experts, who come to our dialogues, and they range across the value chain in terms of all the key sectors we work in: water, human settlements, spatial planning, health, we can name them, Chair. We did have initial discussions, particularly with the Parliamentary Committee for Local Government, around having a parliamentary program, and we also had initial discussions with the Speaker of Parliament as well in terms of how we could use some of these knowledge-sharing opportunities to work with different select committees in Parliament to basically enhance access to particularly some of the leading thinking in some key areas. So I think we take the Honourable Member's point that we actually need to take those discussions forward and have a far more structured approach in terms of giving parliamentarians access to our developing knowledge bank, so to speak, as a knowledge institution, Chair.
Thank you.
Over to you, Chair.
You know, there are big questions that have not been answered. Not because it's not, there aren't any answers. One of which is the question that was raised by Honorable Member Caesar. Here is a big backlog of infrastructure in local government. What exactly is your role as the Development Bank of Southern Africa? The big issue is that, Honorable Member, we are not originators in most of these instances. You know? The originator of a mandate can be a municipality, can be a line function department. We come in at a particular point. So I think it's important when you look at the DBSA to understand that our role, it's a complex one. But there are certain instances where we play a role as an advisor, where we see a problem, we come up with proposals of resolving that problem, but we leave it to the originator to take the next step. There are times with the help of other line functions where we hold hands to get people to move. But that is where the complexity, the dilemma is, you know. To say, here is a huge infrastructure backlog. Here is a development bank. What exactly is its role? And I think when we talk about this path towards being an infrastructure bank of excellence, that is the journey that we are taking. That will have all these compartments of beginning to deal in a consistent way, a sustainable way, with the delivery of infrastructure. Africa, are we late? Are we early? Are we on time? Very difficult to answer. Because in Africa, there is unequal development. The markets are unequal. There are fairly developed countries in terms of within the context of Africa. There are markets that are post-conflict. So it means interventions also. For the next, I think, 50 years, there will still be a role of all companies to develop the African continent. When you look at the development path of China, it has taken close to 4 decades from where some of the African countries are to where China is now. And I think with us also, we must have this medium to long-term goal, which I think the current leadership of the South African government has taken that role. So it's important for our institution to locate ourselves within this medium to long-term goal in as far as the development of Africa is concerned. And at different stages will take different roles, but will partner not just with South African companies, but also with domestic companies in areas where we intervene. And I think it's important to have that picture. The loss, water loss is a big issue. South Africa is a water-scarce country, but in most municipalities, water losses are at 20-30%. And I think that is a serious challenge that is confronting us. Rehabilitation of old infrastructure. Before we even think about building new one, you know, maintenance of the old is one of the big errors that we have seen. And I think once again, together with our competencies in the bank, it's holding hands, moving towards ensuring that there is that sustainability. Thank you, Chairperson.
Oh, the BRICS.
BRICS, it's an interesting forum of powerful developing nations. But as indicated by the acting CEO, we're at a developmental stage. One of the things that we're looking at is improving trade among the BRICS countries. And one of the areas is trading and investing in local currency. Because once you begin to ensure that small companies are able to hedge their own risk by investing in local currencies, like that you increase the volume of investment and the volume of trade by limiting or mitigating the risk that is inherent in trading in hard currency, the fluctuation of the dollar in comparison with the domestic currency.
Deputy Minister.
Yeah, I'm in your hands, but I thought you seem to be eating into your time.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I think that all the difficult matters have been exhausted, and therefore there's no easy one.
No, yeah.
I'm only supplementing the question here. Who just wanted to make an addition? If with your permission, I can allow him. Just a minute.
Okay, defense.
Okay. Thank you, Jane. The issue I need to talk about is more of the funding of the DBSA. As National Treasurer, we are expecting DBSA basically to expand its role in the infrastructure and development in South Africa. And we feel that DBSA has got to do more. part of it basically is assisting those municipalities that we're actually saying are weak. But if you look at the financial performance and or the balance sheet of DBSA, you realize that DBSA is stretched. At some point, DBSA will actually need to be assisted. Let me give just a scenario. If you take all the national DFRs, they have a total balance sheet of 187 billion in 2011. Mm-hmm. The total, I'm talking about all the national DFRs, they have 187 billion. Of that 187, 67 billion is development loans. 67 is a development loans, which basically makes a total of 37%. And then if you take DBSA, its total balance sheet by 2011 was 47 billion. And then its development loans was 37 billion, which makes 80%. Now that actually tells us that the amount of basically of the total assets of the DBSA are invested in loans. Now if you require DBSA basically to do more, it means one way or another we actually have to, as government, have to actually assist DBSA. More specifically because if you look at development finance, it's a more risky kind of a business. So you have to have a higher risk appetite. And that then on its own, it's a very, very risky business. And as National Treasurer, we're actually thinking on how best we can do it. And this is one of the things that we've been trying to discuss with DBSA. And one of the things that we're looking at is how to subsidize some of the costs of the DBSA. Mm-hmm. Because as a DFR, there are certain costs that are there on hand. If you compare DBSA with a bank, because banks have got other income streams, which are not basically non-interest income streams. DBSA's only way of actually raising funds. Basically, it would be interest income and borrowings, or any other whatever form, whether we call it profit or whatever name that you can use. That on its own is not sufficient enough for DBSA basically to extend in mandate, its mandate, or to do more. And as government, we need to come in. So what I'm actually trying to put is, as we're speaking about the sustainability of the DBSA and the DBSA doing more, we need to consider that or some way as government, we need to come in and assist DBSA. Thanks very much.
I was asking the chairperson of the DBSA how much they paid to Lefensa, because the information that he has got volunteered.
How much they paid?
But how much
they paid for?
How much they paid him.
Yeah. Okay.
To do the work that he has just completed. But Chair, this is a sign that the state actually takes what the DBSA seriously, and we actually have seen an increase, as you have seen, in their mandate. We've been piling a lot of on them. And now that Lefensa has volunteered the information, I think that brings comfort also to the committee and to the DBSA that they will be supported by the state going forward. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Deputy Minister and the Chair, Acting CEO. I won't risk to try and raise other issues now because of time, and I would not allow any member to have a follow-up question. Which one is that, Tim?
I asked a specific question around is or was Mr. Moshek a candidate for the post of international head?
Don't respond, Chair. I just want to respond and address this issue. We have a presentation by the DBSA on their annual strategic plan. The chair of DBSA has responded on the issue and the process that they are following to fill the vacant post. That has got nothing to do with a specific name that we are raising now in this meeting. If you have the specific question that you need to ask, you do so at your own time, not for now. Please. Now, honorable members, Deputy Minister, Chair, and the Acting CEO, I think what is clear for us is that like I said yesterday, As a committee, we find it even more helpful for us to visit the institution so that we can have enough time. The issue of 1.5 hour interaction with an institution that is actually at the center of infrastructure development in this country, in the continent, in Africa as a whole, internationally within the family of BRICS, would not be sufficient for us to interact with those issues here. And I was just checking with the WIP. We have visited almost all the institutions. What happened? Why did we overlook this one? Now I think we will have to find time to come and sit down with you just to go through all the number of issues that we want to raise with you. Most importantly is the issue of the what was raised by Honorable Van Rooyen, the capacity building program that we have had at local level, the assessment of its impact, and probably even experiences that we should take to other levels as we move forward from your side. The other issue that I thought I should raise with yourself is that there's a greater expectation on the side of government and probably even the private sector in terms of the centrality of DBSA in infrastructure development. And those of us who have been interacting with the institution, we know that we have been very, very good in terms of skill retention. But I don't think that is going to be enough given this new task. Obviously, it will go beyond the filling of the vacancy of the CEO and so on and so forth in the international division. But I think there's going to be a need to really and seriously relook at the entire organizational structure. How are you going to reposition yourself in trying to meet the expectation that we have? Parliament also has got its own expectations, and I must take this opportunity, Deputy Minister, to thank the Chair for the DBSA's positive response in terms of assisting particularly this Committee of Finance on the area of the Budget Office. It's a process that we're still interacting with themselves, but I think I should take this opportunity on behalf of the Speaker because one has been closely involved in that process. All said and done, I think if we had time, we'll actually spend a lot of time. There are other questions. You can see there are hands that are still wanting to come back, some on related issues, others on unrelated issues. If we had time, we'll actually allow everybody to pose their questions and make follow-ups. But Deputy Minister, thank you very much. Thank you, the Chair. Braluta, I know you didn't say anything today, but we know you've been part of us. Thank you very much. Thank you.
5 minute break?
Yeah. Let's have 5 minutes break. Let's have 5 minutes break.
Thank you.